Gotta get this stuff straight.
You know, we used U.S. Newswire. We sent out a press release yesterday. Surprised what happens. We use them a lot. We don't seem to get a... this seems to happen to us a lot. Are we doing something wrong? We had it posted on the AP Daybook here in D.C. and then U.S. Newswire.
That should do it.
So did you actually attend the...
Let me tell you who we are. Sherry?
Well, getting the Paul Harvey rest of the story version.
This is Joe Bannister. Joe is a former CID special agent in the Criminal Investigation Division. Resigned in... Why don't you tell your story, Joe?
I resigned in February of 99 because I had looked into some claim that the citizens are making about the illegal activities of the IRS, and of course I had a certain one. I just basically did my job, but as I started to look at the bigger picture and the evidence, after about 2 years of part-time research, I realized that it was actually truthful, that the IRS was knowingly violating people's rights and intimidating them into giving away their money. And so I confronted my supervisors with the evidence that I had accumulated, and they sent me out on administrative leave and encouraged me to resign. Refused to respond to any of my questions or concerns, even though, you know, as a special agent, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and I have certain integrity principles I'm supposed to abide by, and they just said, see you later. We don't want to answer any of those questions.
And you are...
I'm John Turner, and I'm from California also, and I was a revenue officer with the Internal Revenue Service for 10 years, from 1987 to 1997.
It's Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R.
T-U-R-N-E-R, that's correct.
We both have statements inside the blue folder.
Oh, that's right.
And I basically, coincidentally, almost at the exact same time as Joe Bannister, on my own had a circumstance arise where I was challenged to refute tax protester claims about, you know, who's required to file and all those kind of things. And I was open-minded enough and naive enough to tell the guy who challenged me, you're on. I'll show you. I'm enforcing the law for 10 years. I'll show you where you're wrong. Well, the more I researched the law and the other things that they don't show you when they train you to do be an enforcement agent, and I discovered the guy was more right than he was wrong. And so I resigned in April of 97. And I'm not anti-government. I'm not anti-taxes. I love my country. I served in the United States Army for 6 years. Had special security clearance that I had to pass to be in that position. I love this country. I'm very concerned about it. And I think what the American people need to know is that the IRS is misapplying the tax law. It's not that the law is wrong or unconstitutional, contrary to what some people say. It's being very much misapplied by the tax administration agency, my former employer.
Can you explain that? What do you mean? Wrong people are being levied?
Well, for instance, there's tons of examples for that, but one thing that's very special to me in terms of my knowledge about it that I've looked into is there's one section of the tax law that talks about if you don't file a tax return, we have the authority to prepare one for you. It's a very important thing, obviously, to protect the system, right? Well, the law itself was written very broad and very general, and I'm being facetious, but you would think when you read it that even your dog could be, you know, that they could enforce it with your dog if they thought he was required to file a return. When you look into so many other things like I have, you find out, and it's not a maybe, it's for sure, they don't have the authority to prepare a Form 1040 for you when you don't file it. And they use a lot of hocus-pocus to be able to get to that next step, which is have the tax be assessed.
Even to the extent of manipulating their computer
system
files.
That applies to you specifically. They have to do that to pull this off. And so that one thing right there is so glaring. It's so important in terms of them being able to protect the system. If I tell people, look, if the American people knew what I'm talking about, if they knew that the IRS really doesn't have the authority to prepare a return for you when you don't, the jig would be up. Everybody would just stop filing. And I'm not interested in seeing mass chaos. I'm interested in the truth and law and order. and our government has a duty to have a tax system that's administered properly so that they're not cheating the American people.
To what extent is that just badly written?
My opinion. The laws have been written carefully by wordsmiths to make sure that it is, on the one hand, constitutional, and yet on the other hand, the game is, who does it really apply to? Does it apply to you? Does it apply to you? Does it apply to me? And what I and Joe and others have found out is it doesn't apply to me as an American working here, just working for Scripps Howard or whoever. And yet, if you just do a cursory reading, you come away from it saying, oh, those IRS agents and those tax protesters are full of a bunch of hooey because the law says, you know, this and that and the other. But you have to dig a little deeper before you come to the conclusion that we have, that it's a big scam and it's done on purpose.
It's done on purpose
to deceive. To deceive the public. They can't force you to file a tax return, sign anything under penalty of perjury. They cannot. Nobody can force it. And a judge will admit that. IRS agents will admit that. If they can't force you to sign something under penalty of perjury, how can they force you to sign a tax return, file a tax return, and pay any tax? And that's just a very elementary thing.
Okay.
I've got a real slightly different story. I'm Bob Schultz. I'm chairman of the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education.
I was. We were
back in 1999. I was talk show host on a major Albany, New York radio station.
Doesn't matter who's in.
And I heard about this guy that resigned because he had submitted questions and he would not answer them. That caught my attention. Not that the issue was taxes, but that he asked his government for answers to some questions, and instead of answering them, they asked him to resign. So I looked at his work. He had a 95-page research report that he posted on or took out a website. I read that. It was sound. And I called him, interviewed him, had him on the air, and that started our foundation looking into this. And we decided that we would sponsor an academic symposium at the National Press Club, which we did in July of 1999. 60 days before the event, we respectfully sent an invitation to the executive and legislative branches to have them identify their most knowledgeable people and have them attend. And that Joe Bannister, Bill Benson, Bill Conklin, and some of the other people that are doing this research would be there, and would they not attend and discuss and debate the issues at the National Press Club Symposium.
By the way, this is all cataloged in this sheet, which is inside.
They didn't show, but C-SPAN showed. C-SPAN broadcast the event live. Okay? We tried again that November, 1999. Same thing. They didn't show. So we decided that we would submit draw up a formal petition for redress of grievances called a remonstrance, a word that's not used a lot today, but in the Declaration of Independence, remember we remonstrated, you know, and so forth. So it was drawn up formally, and in that November meeting, we decided that we would serve it on the leaders of both the executive and legislative branches on the following April. The following April 13th, 2002 now, and all of this, again, is documented in this 8-page article. Joe Bannister and I, and our videographer, were allowed into the White House where a meeting was arranged. We had a delegation of people representing all 50 states that were not allowed in. They had to wait outside. But Joe Bannister and I, and our videographer, met with Clinton's economic advisor, Jason Furman, who worked for... I forget his name, but he was the executive director of the National White House departments. Anyway, on tape, he accepted the petition for redress of grievances for the president. And we said we'd like to try again in June to bring the two sides together to discuss these issues. He promised on tape that the DOJ and the IRS would attend. We met with Hastert's policy director, a guy named Dr. William Ketzel. Same thing, while the whole delegation waited outside. These are people who paid their own way from 50 states to be there in support of the service of the petition for redress of grievances. While they waited outside, Bannister and I and a videographer met with Hastert's policy director, a guy named Dr. William Ketzel. And then we met with, in the Senate side, with Lott's policy director, Keith Hennessy. Same thing. They accepted the petition for the leaders, and they promised to have the experts from the Tax Ways and Means and the Senate Finance Committee attend the next session that we're going to try in June. As we got closer to June, I called Jason Furner at the White House, and on June 2nd, he said, "We've changed our minds. The legality of the income tax is not a high priority matter for the White House, and we will not be attending any conference on the subject." So I said, "You mean to tell me it's okay if the IRS is out there doing what they're doing to people, and they may not have any authority to do it? We're not going to attend the conference." So we held the conference anyway, but then we started taking out full-page ads in the USA Today, not telling people to file or not to file, but just reporting the facts. We ran at $67,000 each. We ran five full-page ads in the USA Today, and eventually one in the New York Times. And to no avail. But the Senate Finance Committee, Bradley, I got a call. David K. Johnston is here attending this thing. I got a call on March 30th, 2001 from the New York Times, David K. Johnston. He said to me, "Bob, do you know that the Senate Finance Committee has scheduled a hearing on your ads next Thursday, April 5th, and there'll be blow-ups of your USA Today ads on easels in front of the committee?" And I said, "No, I didn't know that." And he said, "What are you going to do about it?" And I said, "I don't know. What do you do?" And he says, "Why don't you call the committee and ask to be a witness at the hearing on your ads?" I said, "That's reasonable." So first thing Monday morning, I called Grassley's committee. I said who I was. We're publishing these ads that is telling the story, and we'd like to be on the witness list and testify and give our side of the story. So she said, "Okay, send the thing down." So I faxed the request down. Late that afternoon, I have a typed letter signed by Grassley saying, "Sorry, the witness list is closed on our ads." So,
I'm going to interrupt you. I have to go, but I'm trying to leave the rest of
here. Yeah, and I'm getting ready too.
Thanks.
Okay, it's all in there. Look, I'm all in there.